Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week, we are brought to you, once again, by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. If you have any other questions on that, please direct them to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
And I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast.
Hey, we got a good show today or what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't ever promise anything, but I think we always bring a good show. Today might be one of the great shows, if you will.
Whoa, no pressure there.
Yeah.
No pressure there.
Yeah. Yeah, we do have a special guest waiting in the queue that we'll bring in here in a minute. I think it'll be a good one, a good story. I'm excited to kind of get some of that story myself. I don't have much background. I don't do the Facebook stalking like you do, so.
No Facebook stalking needed here for me. I don't even have a Facebook, bro.
Yeah, I know. That's the funny part.
I'm old. I'm going to get you on this one. Stay tuned.
I can't even make an old joke because you made it first. Stay tuned. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll bring a guest on. We'll go over a weekly riding tip, and then we'll get some backstory, some current story, and maybe some future story from said guest. So stay tuned. I like that. That's good.
Yeah. Roll that intro.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
We're back. And we have a guest. Off to my... I always get this wrong. That way. Whatever side that is. Is Chris Elliott. Moto America racer.
Yes, sir.
King of Colorado. I see a Chuck Walla third place sitting on the background there.
Yep.
That's about all the info I got. Chris, you mind introducing yourself to the audience?
Yeah, so my name's Chris Elliott. I race Moto America 3 years now, and I kind of took a break from it this past season. So I did the first two rounds of Moto America on the 600. We switched to 1000, and I was just doing a whole bunch of local stuff on the 1000. So I was just getting my feet wet in the big bike category, and just focusing on Legion. They had a new racing organization this year, and then the MRA in Colorado, and I've been to Chuck Walla a whole bunch.
Okay.
I have a plaque back here or that way. And this is kind of my wall back here. I am from Colorado, so we have 2 feet of snow outside.
Oof.
So, but we're actually leaving the Chuck Walla on Wednesday, so pretty stoked on that. We'll be out there for round two.
Sweet. So getting out of the cold, headed back down south for a little bit.
Yep. That'd
good. Are we gonna get the story on that big picture in the center there later on?
Oh yeah. Yep. Yep. We will. We will
get right. To
okay. Now, Chris, you say you're getting your feet wet on the 1000, and we're gonna get into that some more later. But I've seen what you getting your feet wet looks like, and my God, come on.
Just a little wet. Just a little bit.
Yeah. That it's crazy. Like, I feel like I've progressed so much in a year. I was doing like 151s at High Plains, kind of 150s at the start of the year. And then I've gotten all the way down to the 46s. So
that is impressive. That's good.
Yeah. That's
a good jump. All right. Well, Chris, if you don't mind, before we dive in too deep, because I know Cole's got a load of questions, and I'm excited to hear all about it. How do you feel about going over a weekly riding tip with us?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sweet. I'd love to also hear your opinion on it. Okay. And this week's weekly riding tip is brought to you by Bittinger Motorsports, which is private coaching that builds solid riders through vision-based training. His tip this week from Josh himself is learn to work less. Many riders push hard and work to carry speed through corners where no speed is to be found. Learn which corners are truly important, usually exits leading to straights. Learn to be patient. Learn when to give up speed in one area to get drive in another. Learn to get the bike pointed in the right direction, then let the bike do the work for you. Learn to relax. When you're riding smart, calm, and relaxed, it's usually when you will set new PBs or personal bests. That is the tip this week.
Okay.
No pressure, Crease, but I'm going to let you start. What do you think of that?
So I think for sure it depends on the track. I feel like Chuck Walla was a track that I struggled with that. I basically just pushed really hard and I wasn't getting the lap times that I was that I wanted to get. Mm-hmm. And especially on the 400 at the time, I just rushed every corner, felt like I was going fast, but then I looked down at my lap timer and I was like, what is going on? You know? So then I talked to Owen Williams out there and we kind of went over it together about the flow of Chuck Walla and how you have to kind of let everything come to you. And it might feel like you're going slower in a corner, but you're actually going a lot faster and just letting the bike roll into the corners, not rushing everything. And the lap times will start dropping like immediately there. And yeah, I just feel like over rushing corners, really, you have to like take your time. It might seem like you're going a lot slower, but you're going faster.
All right. I like that. I can also kind of almost personally attest that a little bit. I got two stories for that. One, I had just set a personal best at the Ridge Motorsports Park and I came around, looked down, lap timer was pretty hot. And I was like, I can do better. I think I can do better. And so I took off, right? And I came to a corner, which was already a fast enough corner. And like halfway through this carousel turn up there, I decided to try and continue to add speed and more speed and more speed. And then, well, the bike slipped out and there was not even a finished lap, let alone a faster lap. So that's story one. Story two, just recently down at Road Atlanta, I set a pretty good, for me, lap time in the morning. And then all day I was just trying to get better, better, and better. And I was focused on that and focused on so many different things. And I was talking to a good friend of ours, Lugnut, and he said, yo, chill out, forget the lap timer, just go ride, have fun, whatever. So I went out for the last session. Almost, I turned the lap timer on still because I was curious, but I wasn't looking at it that time. And I came back and I think I dropped like two or three more seconds that lap alone. Or on during that session, I had a lap that was 2 or 3 seconds down. And we had a discussion afterward about the difference between riding emotionally or riding mechanically. And sometimes when you're pushing, you forget about just riding. And so I think that goes along with the tip. Those are my two stories and input on that.
For sure.
Well, you used two stories, so you already used mine. So,
oof.
We're only allotted one. You used two, so.
That was not in the rules, Cole.
I make the rules up as I go. You should know this by now.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. You got me.
Well, thank you, Josh.
Okay.
I like the tip. I'm excited to get back into the crease info.
All right. Yeah. I got you. It is a good tip. Learn to work less. Let the bike do the work for you when it can. Especially, you know, Crease, when you're talking about moving up to 1,000, I think that's even more true. A lot of times, 1,000cc bikes have been described to me more as a point shoot rather than a flow through the corner. You don't need the corner speed because you have the exit speed. So carry that through. Carry Josh's wide words. Josh, we do thank you for that tip. Keep them coming. We'll keep rolling. But it is time to move into Just Crease. Maybe that'll be our episode title. Just Crease.
Just Crease.
Anyway, where do you want to start, Cole? You sound like you've got all the questions.
Well, Crease, I met you in Brainerd when you was on 400.
Yep.
I had the opportunity to hang out with you and your family, your dad, your mom. Awesome, awesome people. I really appreciated the time there and with you as well. I'd like to hear a little bit about how you got started in this. You're in the, I'm sure you've told the story 100 times, but for our listeners, let's hear it again. You live in Colorado. You are in the dirt bike mecca of the world, potentially.
Yeah.
You've got the 50-time reigning champions living all around you out there.
Yep.
And 2 feet of snow.
Why not dirt bikes? How do we get to the road?
I actually started with dirt bikes until I was about 10 years old. And I loved dirt bikes. I just didn't have the best luck with them. And I don't know, it was either always a bike blowing up or me crashing or something. I don't know, I just never got a real gel with the sport. My best friend, actually, he races dirt bikes at a pretty good level. So sometimes I'll train with him. Like, he'll let me ride his Gas 250. And I love it. It's still fun. I just didn't really see the career path in it. You know what I mean? I fell in love with road racing. My dad did it in the 90s. So it's always been in the background of our family. And I kind of got introduced to it when I was 11. And we had a Ducati 748 in the garage. And I kept asking my dad to ride it. And he would always say, like, no, it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous. And then finally he said, if I can ride it around the neighborhood, then I could do a track day out at Pueblo on it. And I was able to ride around the neighborhood. He had to hold me up from the back of it because I couldn't touch the ground.
I was going to say, at 11, that sounds like a pretty big bike.
Yeah. So he took me out to the track day, and I believe he was on a RSV4, and I was on the Ducati, and I was only 11 years old. And there's a video on YouTube of it. It's pretty sick. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started into motocross, into road racing. And after that, I fell in love with the sport. So I stopped motocross like for a long time and just focused on road racing. We got a Ninja 300 for me, and then I started practicing for two years till I was 13. So I was able to get my racing license with the MRA. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I kind of got my racing license and all that. So,
I just want to open that track day up a little bit more. Just get your thoughts and feelings on that. You know, at 11 years old, I don't know how much of that you're remembering, especially with what you've done since.
Yeah.
But big bike, you mentioned in the neighborhood, your dad had to hold it up. I assume that was pretty similar out at the track day.
Yep.
What is that like, being that young and out doing that?
You know, it's scary for sure. Like, yeah. I just remember we had to actually talk to the owners of the track to like be like, hey, there's just let everybody know at the riders meeting that there's going to be an 11-year-old on this bike. And I had to like get stopped by my dad whenever I came in and leave. Mm-hmm. And just having like people fly by me and stuff, because obviously I'm not going that fast. And it was pretty scary, but like it was super fun. I don't know. Like, I obviously don't remember too much about it, but it felt like I was going really fast and the lap timer showed like a minute off. So, yeah.
I mean, so, I can't even imagine that.
I'm just going to say, feel free at any time, Chris. So Easton likes to make fun of me for being old, but he's pretty old in here today. How old are you, Chris?
I just turned 18, 15 days or October 15th.
Yeah. I'm like 18 and a half. So we're,
you wish.
Just two young guys hanging out with a grandpa over there. I was going to say, though, so 11, you took this 748 out around the neighborhood real quick and then immediately went and did a track day.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, have you had a motorcycle like on the road since that time?
No. So I actually... My dad doesn't, we don't do like street riding in my family. We've just had some past experiences that weren't too great, and we just don't see the point of it, especially in Colorado.
Yeah, that's fair. The 2 feet of snow probably helps with that a little bit.
And there's potholes literally everywhere. And I don't know, it's just super unsafe. And I feel like all the real riding is at the track where there's an ambulance, safety gear, you can go as fast as you want. So I haven't touched the street since, honestly.
Fair enough. I mean, I would say we're pretty big promoters of that lifestyle here on the show anyway. So yeah, I was just kind of curious. That's awesome though. That's cool from 11 years old. So you went from the 748 one track day and then pretty much immediately hopped on a 300.
Yeah, we did a trade with our good friends, Dallas and Aaron up in Denver, and they had a Ninja 300. So okay. We did. Swapped basically right away.
Okay. And so was that like, you remember that being pretty good? Like you're like, okay, cool. Then I can actually handle this or.
Yeah. I was like, okay, now I can actually ride this thing and learn on it.
All right.
For sure.
All right.
Clint, you took that 300. You said That was just kind of an interesting side note. So you have to be 13 for a race license.
Right.
I guess I didn't know what the day. It changes kind of sometimes from group to group.
Right. Like mostly it's 14 that I've heard of around the U.S., but for the MRA, it's for a novice license is 13. Huh. And you have to pass the racing school with a race certificate, basically just showing like you know what you're doing, and then you can race.
So you got the Ninja 300, then you had a couple years of just track days then.
Yeah, just what was it? Like it was like 1.5 because I was almost 12 when I rode the Ducati. Yeah, it was about like a whole full year of track days, and then racing. So
that's crazy.
How was that switch for you? When you went from a track day to your first race day, lining up on the grid, how was that?
Oh, it was crazy. I don't know. Like, it wasn't, like, too big of a deal. It was really fun. Like after my first race, I was so stoked, you know. It's kind of hard to remember. It's so long ago. But I've done so many races since then. It's kind of crazy. But I just remember it being really fun and wanting me to push myself and make myself a better rider.
So just because you're kind of a unique guest here, being one of the youngest racers we've talked to, actually probably the youngest. And I'm a big promoter of, you know, to everyone that's out listening, I do think we should get more kids out there, especially here in America, because I think that's what kind of holds us back. But was there ever, you know, you mentioned on the first track day, people flying by you and whatnot, and then you started racing a year and a half later. Was there any like insane fear associated with that, or like what kind of feelings was it knowing that you're younger and you got a bunch of older dudes that have, you know, more experience mm-hmm. out there?
My dad, he gives me a lot of good like pep talks, and like because he's been obviously a pretty decent rider. Mm-hmm. He got my head kind of going the right direction before that track day and those older riders passing me and everything. I just, you know, stayed to my line, rode what I was doing. I wasn't too scared, I'd say. Like when a guy passed me, I wouldn't like lift up and stuff. I'd just keep doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. Bike was pretty loud, so I didn't get startled by anybody really passing me because I was wringing its neck. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get too scared.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just, yeah, more ammo for me, I think. Kids don't get scared as long as you have a good dad behind them, I guess.
Yeah. Depending on the kids have no fear anyway.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They don't have the experience to have the fear. It's great. That's something I lack.
He ain't been hurt yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, so flash forward, you're 13, taking on Colorado on a Ninja 300. How'd your first season go? Where'd we end up? Get some race wins going, or
yeah. So I was consistently battling with Justin Beamer out in Colorado, okay. And he was always he had like a previous season on me. He kind of started. He's a little older than me, so we I was getting a lot of like seconds and thirds for most of the season, and I actually had my first crash at what was it? Actually, it was my first race weekend. I had my first crash at Pikes Peak.
Okay.
Around the International Horseshoe, I was just had too much lean angle and wasn't really leaning off the bike. And I just lost like the rear tire, like the compound on the right side. It literally just was so far leaned over that I had no more tire. So it just slipped. And I mean, that was a good experience for me. I got to race. I got like two podiums, and then at the last race, I crashed. So I kind of got it all in one weekend.
There you go.
yeah, the year went really well. I did get Rookie of the Year, and I ended with two race wins. So I was pretty stoked on that. Honestly. Okay.
Heck yeah, Rookie of the Year is pretty good. Do they offer that in Utah, Cole? Do they have a Rookie of the Year award?
Yeah, I was going to get it, but then they said I was over 50, so it didn't matter.
You're not a rookie if you're too old. Sorry. All right. And then, so that was season one, Ninja 300. When did we make it to Moto America?
So I did another year of club racing. I moved to novice, skipped amateur, went to expert. And then I was on a Ninja 400, so we switched. I did a whole nother year of club racing, so basically just trying to get more experience. And then I finished like second in those 500 super sport and superbike championships to Justin again. And then we went to Moto America the following year. But I did something big. I did after MRA in 2021, I went to Chuckwalla. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like a big thing for me because it was my first time racing out of state. The competition was super fast. Like, it was a lot for me to process.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, wow, okay, I could train out here and get really fast. You know what I mean? So I started out kind of well. My best lap time was like a 201 on a 400 for my first race weekend. And then second race weekend out there, it was like only a 2 minute flat. And I was like, man, this isn't going to cut it in Moto America for Junior Cup. So we actually did do Junior Cup, and we showed up to Atlanta, and my bike was like, we didn't really know what to expect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We just wanted to get our feet wet in the class. And my bike was so slow compared to the rest of the bikes. Like, I think we didn't know what the horsepower, what was good, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like 38, 39 horsepower, and all the top bikes were at like 45 plus, like to 50.
Wow.
And that's a lot for a 400.
Yeah, right. Big difference.
So I get out there, and my dad notices right away. He's like, these bikes are way faster. And I noticed it too. Obviously, I was getting like destroyed. And I was able to qualify for my first national. It didn't go too well. I got last, but it was
Made it on the grid. That's still an accomplishment.
Right. Yeah. So we, I don't know. We just kept going. We went to VIR next. And then that's where we really noticed it. Cause at first we were like, okay, maybe it's like, I'm not going fast enough, you know, through the corners and stuff. And maybe I'm not getting that drive that they are. So we went to the next round, and VIR, there's a huge straightaway.
Yeah.
And that's where we really noticed it. There's a video in qualifying one of me behind Max Van and Gus Rodeo, and I get like the same drive as them, and I'm in their draft, and I get walked like 20, 30 bike lengths by the end of the straightaway. And that's when we really noticed, like, okay, we gotta do something about this. So we skipped the next rounds to try to get the bike better without doing motor work. So we got like an air filter. Changed some body work for weight and stuff. So then we went to the ridge, and then the same kind of deal at the ridge. We gained like 2 horsepower.
Okay.
And we actually ended up tuning it in between VR and the ridge. And the guy that tuned it prior had it on eco mode, like the tuner. So it was like gas efficient, but it wasn't making power.
Fuel efficiency while racing. That's what I'm talking about. That's pretty good. Yeah.
So we still only gained like 2 horsepower. So we were on like 40, 41.
Okay.
And it was a little faster, but still wasn't like competitive. So after the ridge, we skipped a bunch of rounds trying to get this thing better. So we even went to, what is it? Lakamoto bodywork, super light stuff. Got a this M4 shorty exhaust that was supposed to make good power with the 400s and Junior Cup, because we have there's a restrictor plate in those, and they limit our RPMs to 10.35 instead of like 12 or something like that.
Okay.
And we showed up at the last round at Barber, and right away I was competitive. Like, I think we were still at like 43 horsepower or something like that. I was competitive. I was battling kind of like in the top 12.
Okay.
And pretty sure my best result was an 11th.
Okay. So you did Road Atlanta, VIR, the Ridge, and Barber that year.
I did Brainerd before Barber. Okay. So we got everything fixed, and then I went to Brainerd. And then as we're coming up, like driving to Brainerd, we got it tuned in Brainerd, Minnesota, like a couple days before the Moto America. And this is actually a funny story. So I did my first race and it went pretty well. It got flagged for a red flag and they canceled like the rest of the race because it was over half distance. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure I got like a 12 and there was still like three or four guys behind me. So it was my first time like not finishing last.
There you go.
That was a good finish for me. And then I was super stoked on learning or getting faster for Sunday. And there was another red flag and then they moved the race to the end of the day. So it was only like a 5-lap sprint. And okay. I was hanging with like the front group for like 2 laps. It was a big train. And then I was battling with a Minnesota local. His name's Jake Vandal. And we were going back and forth for, I think it was like 10th and 11th place. Mm-hmm. The 9th place. It was something like a really good result. And then on the last lap, I was coming down the back straightaway at Brainerd, coming into turn 2 or 3. And I ran out of gas. And the funny thing is, before this race, I was like, did you put gas in the bike, Dad? And he's like, yeah, I did. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And then I came back, and then I don't think he put gas in the bike. Like, I'd have to ask him, but he's like, forgot or something like that. And I was like devastated because obviously that would have been like my first national top 10. Mm-hmm. And I was younger at the time, so I let my emotions get to me. And I was just like super upset. But that round, I obviously didn't finish the race. So
you were wishing you had that eco mode then.
Yeah. For real. No, so we went after that. Then we went to Barber and I got another good 2 results in that season. So I was feeling really good for the next Moto America year.
Okay. So you started in Colorado, you ended up making a trip down to California, down to Chuckwalla, you know, the famous winter training ground for many racers here in America.
Yes.
Which I assume that kind of took some of the edge off, but like that, you know, the first race in Moto America, the first season in Moto America, heading to all these different tracks across the country, you know, what are the feelings there? Is it just show up, stay in your head, you're good? Or, you know, what are the butterflies doing with all that?
It was definitely like nerve wracking, just knowing like, okay, I'm on Road Atlanta right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I just started racing 2 years ago and I'm on Road Atlanta. I was like, I literally play this track on video games. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. And yeah. Then just knowing like, okay, there's like a camera that's on me. There's people watching this. It's kind of different. You know what I mean? It's definitely nerve wracking. Like my first season, it kind of got to my head for sure, knowing like, okay, everything's like filmed, you know, people are watching this. But I don't know, towards the end of the season, I kind of didn't really care as much. I just kind of did my own thing.
Okay.
Definitely in 23, once I was in the front of Junior Cup, like in that top like 7, it was a lot more nerve-wracking because I started getting interviewed, people started asking me to do podcasts with them at the track, just a whole bunch of people to me. But now it's what is that, second nature. Like I feel fine doing podcasts, interviews, being on TV. I have a couple interviews with like Michael Hill while in a qualifying session, before a race, after a race, stuff like that.
So. Mm-hmm.
I can talk pretty easily on the TV now.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
I think it's one of those skills that they don't, I don't know. I mean, I'm very late in the game and I'll never make it to where you're at, but I don't think they often, people think about that, you know, the skill of putting, especially for young kids, honestly, like you're putting a young kid in front of a camera and expecting them to be able to do anything, honestly.
Right.
When they just got done with a race too, like, mm-hmm. That's crazy, but that's good.
So when I met you in Brainerd, you kids, and I'm sorry, I'm gonna say you kids, but you kids that were racing Junior Cup, you had a little bit of a click there. I mean, you guys were parked next to Rossi Moore, for example,
right?
And you guys all seem to know each other pretty well. I mean, I'm gonna show my age here, but watching you kids, you know, wheeling your bicycles around the parking lot in between rounds, you know, blowing off steam and just hanging out. Did you meet all those guys, you know, through CVMA? Is that where you guys made friends?
Yeah, so I met Owen in like Jaden. I've known obviously from the MRA because he's up in Erie, Colorado. Mm-hmm. So we've never really raced each other because he was on like a Milwaukee 250 and like a NSF. Mm-hmm. So he was always in like the lightweight and I was in the ultra lightweight. But no, I knew Jaden from, I really started hanging out with him at Chuck Walla too, as well as Owen. So I knew them too. And then I actually met Rossi at Atlanta that year. So last year. And he was also pitted with us at the kind of at the end, you know. So yeah, I met Rossi at the start of the year, and then we just became like really good friends. And I don't know, the Junior Cup kind of paddock is everybody's just kind of friends, or they like hate each other. Kind of funny. But no, we'll just we'll kind of just mess around in between races. I don't know. I feel like if I get my head off of things, like just, you know, focus on like my friends and just hang out, then it kind of, my nerves, you know, they go down for sure. And then I don't know. I feel like once we start racing, there's like that competition level to where like if we're friends or not, like we're racing, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. The red mist.
Yep, exactly.
Our editor keeps mentioning, she's like, what is this red mist? Why do you guys keep going on about this red mist? I'm like, no, you don't get it.
You got to know. You gotta have it to experience it.
There you go. No red mist in the parking lot, but once that flag waves,
it's over.
Lights go out.
Mm-hmm.
So just moving this forward. So you went from the 400, yes. And then, I mean, this is leading somewhere, but you went to a 600.
Yes.
And what was your reason for moving to that one? It's going to be a leading question, but what was your reason for moving up at that time?
So we, at the end of last year, we started riding the 600 more in between Moto America rounds just to get, cause we knew like, okay, this is probably going to be my last season as I'm getting a little older, and we want to get on a bigger bike sooner, so we're not wasting time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started riding the 600 during the Junior Cup year. And then at the end of Barber, what was the last? Pittsburgh was my last round for Junior Cup. I had a pretty gnarly crash that's up there. And that kind of ended our season for us.
What happened? While we're on the picture, let's get the picture. That's a great picture.
Yeah, it's a money shot.
Shout out to Bison Leathers real quick. Yep, if you're looking for good leathers, hit them up.
So it was at Pittsburgh. Have you guys been to Pittsburgh before?
I'm not.
Okay. So there's a pretty long straightaway, and then there's a left right down a hill. And I was in a qualifying two session. I was following Jaden, Max Van, and Rossi, and we were in a group qualifying together.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another rider that was getting onto the track, and as you kind of going down the straightaway on the right side, you come in on the left side, like for the pit lane exit, and you go down the straightaway, and then you're supposed to join like after the left right, kind of like you kind of stay to the left, or you can funnel in after the straightaway if there's nobody coming.
Okay.
And so there was this kid that was coming. He went down the left, and then we all came down the left, but he stayed to the left. And then as we flipped to the right, so Max went through, Jaden went through, Rossi went through, and Rossi barely made it before he turned down. And I tried to go through with them. And then the rider didn't see me. So he went in behind Rossi, and then I completely like T-boned him.
True.
And then I got launched, and then I hit my head. So I got a pretty bad concussion, and I don't remember too much from it, obviously. But that ended our weekend. I was unfit from Moto America. I got declared unfit. So we packed it up and went home. A good like 25-hour drive.
Yeah, from Pennsylvania to Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that sucked because I was actually doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I was like on the verge of the top five. That lap would have put me in the top five. Sucks, but that's what happened with that picture over there.
That is gnarly. Stick to the blend line.
Yep.
Don't cross the line.
So after that, we stopped racing Junior Cup for the season. Just decided to like, okay, we need to take a... Because the next round would have been at New Jersey's, and that's even further from us. Yes. So I was like not in any points scenarios, so we just stayed home. I don't know if Chuck Walla round one was during New Jersey or was kind of close to it, but we ended up going to Chuck Walla instead. And I actually raced the 400 for money. I raced that out at Chuck Walla against Jaden Fernandez. That was like my main competition out there for that. And then I also raced the 600 as well.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, you're racing the 400 for money. It just sparked a thought. So I know your dad played a big role in a lot of this, yes. Which I think we'd like to talk to him at some point too.
Okay.
It'd be kind of fun. But anyway, so it's just, did you end up winning any money when you were doing that?
Yeah, for sure. So go back before the 23 season, before I started that second Junior Cup year, I was riding the 400 almost every round at Chuck Walla. And we were actually getting a lot of money in that shootout class. And in the Formula Ultra Lightweights, they do payouts for contingency for Kawasaki. So we would walk out of there with like $2,000-$3,000 a weekend from racing that. So we liked that. So that's why we brought it down again for round one of Chuck Walla. And I got a second place to Jaden. And I don't know, I just didn't feel the same. Like I felt really big on the bike. I just didn't like it compared to the 600. So I raced the 600 there. That 600 class at Chuck Walla is kind of like a meat grinder class. It's pretty crazy. And I fell in love with the 600 from there.
What bike were you on, just out of curiosity?
So I was on the Ninja, the 636. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of stayed with the Kawasaki, which wasn't the best idea coming forward. I'll talk about that. But yeah, so I raced Chuck Walla the first two rounds of Chuck Walla on the 636, and we stopped with the 400 after round one because I just didn't like it. So I got money from there and then moved to the 600 full time, and I felt like I was gelling with the 600, but there was obviously some stuff that needed to be done. It was still pretty stock at the time. It just had like an exhaust and some suspension.
Mm-hmm.
So after that third round at Chuck Walla, we skipped the entire Chuck Walla season. And then we went just to build up funds and sponsor funds to support our Moto America season.
Yep.
So we switched everything, you know, made everything super sport legal for the 600, got the motor built. Then we showed up at Atlanta, and I've already been to this track 2 years in a row, so I was feeling pretty confident. But as you guys know, the Super Sport grid this year was stacked.
Absolutely.
So first practice went decently well. I was like 30th out of 40 or something like that. The suspension was completely off. We had a previous suspension guy doing our work for us, and it was just completely off. So basically, whenever I'd come into a corner, or say, you know, at Atlanta, you come up turn one, two, and then there's the chicanes.
Mm-hmm.
So through there, my bike would like completely nosedive. Okay. And then it would all rely on the front tire, so it would steer super slow. And you know, there you have to flick super fast.
Yeah, I wasn't good at that, but you do have to do that if you want to be faster.
Yeah. And it was just so much stress on like my arms because I was having to turn it so fast, so hard. So I noticed that right away. And then off the back straightaway, coming in, well, I think it's 10A, that left, whenever I'd brake, the front end would just dive so hard on the front. Like it was like almost unturnable. Like it would not want to turn to the left.
Jeez.
So we made a pretty big change with K-Tech. They helped us out to what they could. They said we already had springs that were way off. So we went into Q2, and then the nut on my clutch basket that holds it in, it came loose in the pit lane coming out. So I came up, and then going into two, I had no clutch. So I had to, and on the 636, we don't have auto blip, so we have clutch. And, you know, go all the way around, come back in, and we had to take, obviously, the case off to get to that. So that was a whole session done because we had to wait for it to cool down and all that. So that was Q1. So then I was already, like, super, like, stressed out from everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we did another pretty big suspension change, and then we had K-Tech on the wall with us for Q2. We got everything fixed. Oh, and then this was pretty big that I left out, but we were having transmission issues with the 636 pretty bad, to where it would be popping out of gear, almost like any gear. It would just pop into either neutral, middle of like fourth and fifth, third and fourth, like anything. So we were having problems with that. So we took out our old transmission and then borrowed one from the Da Silva brothers, the Silva brothers. And they gave us a transmission that's still stock, but it was better than ours. So we put that in for Q2 and then went out in Q2. Was doing decent lap times. I was doing like 34s, and then I dropped to the end of the 33s, and then towards the end of the session I was like 36th place, and they take like 34 riders there on the grid. I saw it on my pit board, and I was like, I need this lap. Like, I need like a good lap. And I had a really good lap going. And the suspension still wasn't 100%. It was probably like 50% good. And I had David Anthony pass me right before the long straightaway. And I was back. Good toe from him. It was like coming into those two right-hand corners, like back-to-back before the straightaway.
Mm-hmm.
He passed me right before that. And I had like the perfect drive to get a draft from him. And I was already like a second and a half up on my lap timer. And I was coming off that, you know, those rumble strips when you're getting onto the back straightaway that are on the left.
Yep.
So I was getting off of those. And when I go to shift from first to second, it goes into neutral.
Ooh.
So, and then I try slamming it back into gear and it's not going into gear. And by the time I get it, I've lost 2 seconds on the straightaway. And that was my last lap in qualifying. So I didn't qualify for that. And obviously I was like, okay, this qualifying shouldn't be a problem, right? So now I didn't qualify, and I was super, like, just, like devastated.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Like, not qualified for a national before. So that was a tough pill to swallow for sure. And
that was your first round on a 600 in Moto America?
Yeah.
Yeah, dang. That is that's rough.
Yeah. So then we went back home and then did some more testing. Like we did one MRA in between Atlanta and Barber to get it figured out. So we put another new transmission in, or a decent transmission. We just messed with like the shift forks because they were all bent and pretty worn out. So we got new shift forks. Then I did pretty well in the MRA. So we're like, okay, we'll go to Barber. So we show up at Barber, and there was like 56 entries. There was a group A and a group B.
Yeah, we were there for that one.
Yeah. So that was a lot of people. And I did pretty well in practice in qualifying one. I was like, let's say, I was sixth.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
Then group B in practice, and then qualifying one is when those transmission issues started coming back again. Like, I would literally go down the back straightaway by the museum, and I'd be in fourth gear, and it would drop down to third, like, out of nowhere. So we were struggling with that, but I tried to still get a good lap in that qualifying just to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I was like 33rd out of 32 riders in qualifying one, and or 33rd and 32 riders make the grid. So again, I was at that like point where I was like, okay, I'm on like the line here.
Right.
And we were having suspension issues again, to where we had put on a new tire and we would shred that tire in like six laps. It was gone. So we didn't really know what to do with that. So we did Q2 in the morning, and I was like, okay, I really have to lock down. You know what I mean? But Q2, they actually mixed us with the A riders. So there was like 40, 50 people on the track at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting good toes all throughout the session, where I was able to like latch onto the faster riders. And I had Hunter Dunham pass me, and like right at the start of the lap, and he was like that kind of benchmark. He was like in like 27th place. I was like, okay, I need to stick to this guy.
Right.
So I was sticking to him all lap, or the whole lap, most of the lap. And then coming around the museum again, I had another shifting issue where it literally went to like fourth, fifth gear when I shifted from third to fourth. So I went into fourth and then to the fifth. So I lost all my drive, and then downshifted into fourth. Then I tried just latching on. I looked down at my lap timer and it said like 31.5, and I needed 31.4 to qualify.
Oof.
So I didn't qualify there by like literally like a tenth of a second, like half a tenth of a second. And I was pretty pissed, you know, after that. So we really wanted to get it figured out, the suspension. So and the transmission, that was a big deal, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we got the bike, brought it to KTech, and they said, this thing is completely off. Like, we don't know how you're riding this thing at the pace you were. They changed the springs like completely. It was like 8.0s to 9.5s. And then in the rear, it was like four springs off, like crazy numbers.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of like, okay, we need to really test this bike and then come back and not be so rushed. So we went home right when I started feeling really good with the suspension at home. We did MRA round 4 at Pueblo, and I won my first middleweight race there. Okay. And then it was a sprint, and then we had the 2X, which is like a double length race. I won that race, and I was feeling really good. I was like, okay, we can, like, this thing feels good. Like, it feels like a proper race bike now. And then in that morning session for Race of the Rockies qualifying, I was like second overall out of the thousands and 600s. And I just did like my personal best lap. I was like a second off the lap record at that time. And then coming around again, I was like a second down on my best lap, and the bike blew up. So we popped the motor, and we don't have spare motors. Like, we don't have a spare motor. That was a big, like, okay, we need to take a break.
Yeah.
So as we're, you know, we go home, didn't race. Well, actually, no, I did race that RR race on a stock ZX6 that this guy let me borrow.
Okay.
Running around like fifth or sixth place. And then I didn't finish that race because there was something wrong with his bike. It was getting really hot. So I just pulled in. But no, we went home, and my dad's like, okay, while we get this thing fixed, you need to be riding something.
Mm-hmm.
And the R1's just sitting in the corner of our garage.
Ooh. Here we go.
Like, well, let's ride that. And he's like, yeah, I think that's a good idea too. I was like, he's like, you need to be riding something. I start riding the R1 after Pueblo, and I was just doing like, I did like two or three track days on it, and I was like really fast on it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right away. And me and my dad started thinking, we're like, okay, well, maybe we just stick to the R1 this year and we'll get the ZX6 fixed eventually and we'll see where it goes, basically. So I started doing some club racing on the R1, and my first club race with the MRA was West Course at High Plains. And Brad Hendry, he's like the one of the fast Colorado guys for the MRA.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't too far off of him. I was doing, let's say, West Course. I was doing 24s, and he was doing like low 23s.
Okay.
He probably got me by, I think it was 9 seconds at the end. But I was super stoked. It was my first like MRA, like Race Rockies podium. So I noticed I had a lot of potential with this bike.
Yeah.
It kind of suited my riding style more. It felt like a race bike right away. Like, just like it felt good, like butter.
So just to, sorry, not to interrupt you too much, but just to kind of, I don't know, maybe make one of our guest hosts a little mad. Kawasaki's a big old, like, thumbs down then? Yeah. Yeah. All right. Just had to get that out there.
Yeah, we actually just took off the Kawasaki on our bus. So.
There we go.
Yep.
A lot of bigger and better things.
Yep.
All right, back into it. Podium on the R1. King of the Rockies?
Race of the Rockies.
King of the Mountain in Utah. Race of the Rockies in Colorado. All right, got it. All these mountain races. Hard.
Right. The snowy states.
Yeah.
Good stuff. But yeah, so I felt like it matched my riding style a lot more because I'm a type of guy that likes to fly into the corners and then get on the gas and get out.
Yeah.
And I had to adapt to it, obviously, coming from the 600. It took me a little bit of time, probably like a round or two, to get it really down at High Plains.
Mm-hmm.
At High Plains, there's a lot of point-and-shoot corners where you just fly in on the brakes and then get out. And yeah, I felt like it really matched what I felt was good on a bike. The suspension felt really good right away, so we haven't really messed with it at all still.
It was staying in gear and no false neutrals or anything.
None of that.
Hasn't blown up yet.
No, not yet.
Yeah, I mean Yamaha does have a history there too, but yeah, we don't want to say too much, you know.
No, you're good.
Only good vibes.
Only good vibes in the Yamaha pit. Yeah, I just started doing some club racing. Did that first MRA round, and we really didn't even look back at the 600 after that. We were just like, honestly, the 600 still isn't built. It's in our garage sitting there with no motor in it. It's just sitting there. So after that, we did the whole graphics on the R1, like mm-hmm. to match like my suit and everything. So it looks pretty good now. We were just like taking it more serious. Like, okay, this is going to be like your bike. You're going to race it. And we're going to try to shoot for stock 1000 next year.
Okay.
So that's the goal right now for next year. And as I've been getting faster and faster with the MRA and Legion Superbike, I've been getting closer to like lap record pace at High Plains almost, kind of. I'm like at low 46s and the lap record's a 43.9, but it was by Jake Gagne on a factory bike. So
yeah.
I'm still pretty stoked on that as of right now where I'm at. I still have a lot more to learn on the 1000, and I feel like we have a lot of time to get faster before Atlanta next year. So.
Okay. So just to kind of take a detour, because I'm curious, because once again, being one of the youngest, you just turned 18.
Yeah.
You've been traveling all over the country for a few years now, racing motorcycles. Outside of that, what does life look like? You know, you come home from a race weekend, and I don't need details of, you know, your daily routine or anything, but you know, what do you do on a weekend when you're not at the track? Do you even have any of those?
Yeah, I do, for sure, especially in Colorado.
Okay. Yeah, well, I guess that's fair.
Yeah. So I train a lot. I go to the gym almost every day of the week, usually every day of the week. And then I'll do like one off day on a weekend. We have some go-kart tracks around here. So I usually bring my, I still have one 400. It's like kart track race. Like it's got like all the frames and stuff. I bring that up there and I'll train with Brad, or we're going to start training here soon once the snow goes away. Mm-hmm. But that's really fun. I do that for training when I'm not riding on the big track.
Okay.
And then I go to school. I do this. I go to the Village. It's called, it's a hybrid high school. So whenever I'm in town, I go into school, but I'm a senior this year. So I have one class a day kind of thing. So I'll go in from like 11 to like 12:30 and then I'll be done. And then I have three or four classes actually online that I do. So I have like a literature class, math class, science, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So just to like, I kind of want to expand on that just a little bit, cause I'm curious, like how has that been, you know, mentally and whatnot balancing? Yeah. Obviously you got to finish high school.
Yeah.
Like it's got to happen. Right. You're out here racing and doing stuff that most high schoolers aren't. Just, you know, what does that balance look like?
It's definitely hard. I've been behind in school the past couple of years just because I've missed so much that we went into online. And honestly, still, like, I'm at a point where in school, the teachers, they're not, I don't have like a set teacher for every class. They don't like tell me do this and do that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do it on my own. So it's kind of that like self-motivation thing to get my schoolwork done.
Yeah.
And to like make time for it on top of the racing. So I'll actually bring like my laptop to Chuck Walla with me this week to get work done as the semester is coming to an end in December. So it's definitely hard though, like balancing it together, I'd say.
Okay. Is there any, I don't know how to word that. I guess any hold? You hate doing schoolwork? Is it a nuisance, or is it just kind of, you know, you got to get it done? And
yeah, I don't like it for sure. Nobody likes schoolwork. Yeah, it's at a point now since I'm a senior, it's like I have to get this done or I'm not going to graduate kind of deal. I mean, I'm doing a pretty good job on it this year, so I'm glad I'm putting myself like, okay, do this, and actually doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say it's definitely not my favorite.
Rather be out on the bikes. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can leave the school behind. I was just kind of curious. It is interesting to talk to someone that's in that kind of unique opportunity. I've always been curious what the juggling game looks like when it comes to, because school's got to happen. You got to have your education. But when you find a person that's talented and you have a chance to build that talent and nurture it, you know, finding the balance between the two is interesting. So that's cool. Where were we at, Cole, before we took the detour?
I don't know. You took a detour on school, and so I've just been waiting to get back to motorcycles.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I've told this story on here a couple times, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up again. You know, I got the pleasure of riding on the same track with you at High Plains.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about, it's just interesting to me, going back to the picture behind you. So pardon my language, but you smashed your brains out on the 400. So you were like, screw it, we're going to a 600.
Yep.
Let's get a faster bike. Crash that one. Let's get a faster one. And then you had problems with the 600. So you're like, forget that. Let's get a faster one. And it's just interesting that I seen you ride. I seen how comfortable you look on that bike.
Yeah.
And I mean, how tall are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm like 5'9" and a half, like 5'10", kind of depends when I get my haircut.
That's true. That is true with you. So it's just interesting because a lot of times you hear people that, you know, start out on 400s and they're just too big. They just, you know, naturally they're just too big, and it's not that they don't like a 400. It's just they can't be competitive. So they're forced to move to another bike, but you're a small enough guy that that was not your limitation. But if you look at you on a thousand now, it just seems to fit. The shoe fits. I'd wear it. And there's no going back now. You mentioned the point and shoot, but I always tell, I've thanked you on here before, actually, on a previous podcast, because just so that anybody that heard that story, this is the guy. This is the guy. You passed me one at one point at High Plains. It's probably the only time you could have passed me, I'm sure. But
right. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that head shake when he said 146. I seen you over there.
No, you, one of the craziest things you see in MotoGP, it's camera angles and stuff like that, but people taking their leg off the peg, you know, to break into a corner. And sometimes just because of that camera angle, it looks like their leg is pointed in the air.
Right.
It's just kind of a weird, cause they're still finishing this turn, but
they're both up that way. Yeah.
You did that in front of me. You did that in front of me. I got to see that in real life, and I appreciate that. But I got to see that in real life, and then I watched you. So you passed me, and then the guy that was in front of me, and you just slid that bike sideways, backed it in, as they say.
Yeah.
With a leg off the peg, sideways. And I just said, yep, that's why I'm just doing this for fun.
Yeah. It's definitely a comfort level for me. Like with my whole leg off and stuff, I feel like when the bike's moving all around like that, that when my leg's off, it and like I'll do like a little drag on the ground at the end, that it comforts me out a little bit. It's almost like motocross, like it's like a motocross thing for me, because you know how you put your foot out and like in a corner in motocross.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like putting my foot out because I feel more comfortable on the bike. Like it makes me feel like, okay, I'm planted right here. If anything happens, I'll be able to like save it. Kind
of thing. Interesting. So I'm curious on that because I still don't understand the leg dangle completely. The first time you ever did it, was it like a natural thing that just happened, or were you like, I'm gonna do a leg dangle right here?
So I actually. I did training out at Corner Spin this past year. It's like a flat track camp with Blake Davis. He's like one of my best friends.
Yeah. Okay.
He brought me out there and we did like 3 days of training. But you know, in flat track, how you always put your leg out
mm-hmm.
in the corners. So I never really did the leg dangling before that. This is kind of like in the transition to the 400 to 600. I went there. And just right away, I'd come into a corner and just put it out, like same as flat track almost. And it felt so much more comfortable. I don't know. Like, it was just kind of like a, like, okay, I'll try it. And then at first, like, it was like my first time. I was like, okay, I'm going to try it, like flat track. And I did it. And I was like, whoa. I was like, I feel like I could break so much later because I felt so much more comfortable.
You get that extra friction from the toe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you feel where you're at.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so a little bit of dirt action, flat tracking, where it's a lot more natural, kind of just opened up the world. Essentially,
we've had the guys from Corner Spin on the show here before.
Okay,
your endorsement. The school's worth it. You like the school?
Yeah, for sure. I think so. Coach Aaron, he teached me how to like tuck the front. And slide, you know, of course. And I feel like it translates really well to road racing on the big bike for sure, because it's got so much power that it can slide. So we did it's like a 0.5 school that we did with him. And just all day he had just me and Blake tuck in the front on purpose. So we'd fly into a corner on these CRF like 100s or XR100s. And we'd have to purposely like tuck the front and hold it there while on the gas all the way around the corner and then stand the bike up. And then we would do drills where we'd like do no foot, tuck the front, and then get back on the gas and then like bring the bike up and then slide out. Like the stuff, like little things like that translate to the road so easy. Because on the big bike, you come into the corner all sideways and then you want to be prepared. If the front end tucks, like what to do, you know? And then when you get on the gas, it's really big to pick that bike up and get it pointed and then aim where you're shooting, kind of thing. So that helped me a lot with the big bike.
Okay.
Sure.
So, and then you're on the R1, doing pretty good. Sounds like you're headed to Chuckwalla this season.
Yes, we're going this week.
Okay. Coming. So hit me with the like real expectation, because Chuckwalla's, you know, it's nasty down there.
Yeah.
Boys are crazy. What your goals, your hopes, and like, I mean, yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Hopefully they're realistic. You should always shoot for the top, but just kind of curious where you think you'll end up.
Yeah, so I'm doing the Formula Open class.
Okay.
So I won't, I guess, so in their shootout, it's stock 1000 shootout. So they have their stock 1000 rules.
Mm-hmm.
On our R1, we have like Superbike triple clamps, Superbike forks, Superbike wheels. Like, so I can't race that class technically. So I'm just doing the Formula Open class against like Corey, Jason Uribe, Owen, like all those fast guys. So I've been looking at the times, and they say they translate kind of to Chuckwalla with High Plains. And I've noticed that because I've been able to do like 50s and 51s at Chuckwalla and the same at High Plains. Mm-hmm. And you do 46s at High Plains, people do 46s at Chuckwalla. So last round, they were doing 45s at the front, like low 45s, right? I'm pretty sure. And I think if I have that competition, I could probably, my goal is to dip into like the 46s at Chuckwalla, 45s area.
Okay.
I don't know necessarily where that'll put me.
Yeah.
But I want to shoot for top fives.
Okay. So you're kind of hoping heading over there with, you know, with the certified super fast guys, kind of hopefully wiggles you up into their area.
Right. Cause they were both top one stock 1000 guys, as Corey and Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And last round, Michael Gilbert did race that class. So if he signs up, you know, it'll be definitely good for me as I'm going into stock 1000 next year. Yeah, I feel like this is a big opportunity for me to show what I got.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you plan on doing a full season down there?
Probably not. We got a fund for next year too. Yeah,
absolutely. So
we want to definitely do 3 rounds or so.
Okay. And you mentioned you got, you know, some super bike parts on that bike, but you're planning on stock 1000 next year. So you got to also, you know, not just funding to travel, but funding to get the race bike built.
Yes. So. And it probably won't be on Yamaha.
Don't tell me you're going back green.
No.
Okay. All right. BMW? You don't have to share your secrets if you don't want to, but.
Yeah, I think we're going to go BMW.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Cole's a super fan now. Send him a jersey so he can wear it around.
I will.
It has to say BMW bigger than your name, though. Otherwise, he probably won't wear it.
Not too big on the back.
Yeah, there you go. All right. all right. Well,
I like it. I'm excited.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm stoked on that.
Have you ridden a Beamer yet?
No.
No? Okay.
I feel like it would really suit me. Like, because I'm really good on the brakes, and I've heard they're really good on the brakes.
Well, that's just because they get top rack. Before that, Yamaha was good on the brakes. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm just kidding.
No, I feel like I kind of have that, I don't want to say like a top rack riding style, but I could definitely like, I feel like I could push myself like that on a BMW. And they're just stupid fast.
They're pretty good. They also did just get more horsepower. So
yeah, we're planning to go with an Alpha BMW.
Okay.
So we're gonna get one of them from Alpha. That's the goal. Either an S or an M. We haven't decided yet. But those come with like good electronics. They're already race ready.
Yeah. So yeah, kind of pre built package.
Right.
Alpha is good at that. Just make sure they don't leave it in economy mode.
Yeah, I'll probably have to email them in German.
Yeah. I got people over there if you need some help with the translation. Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, awesome. That's I'm excited for you. It's cool to see you. You know, I met you at Barber this year. It's cool to finally actually meet you. I think at Barber I just saw a kid in a hat. I was like,
Yeah.
But it's cool to get to talk to you and get your story. It's wild. You know, props to you for keeping it up. Props to, I got to give your dad some credit, not to take in, you know, you out of the picture there, but I know being a dad and toting you all across the country. And it sounds like the only other question I have for you is like motivation for the motorcycle race. And has there ever been an issue with that? You know, is there ever been like a Saturday that you're like, no, I don't want to ride? I assume not, but.
I would say after that 600 first two rounds, I was at a point to where I was like, I don't know what to do, you know?
Okay.
But I've always been that, like, I'm super motivated right now. Like, as I've been getting faster and faster on the R1, winning at the end of the season was big. I won the last race of the Rockies race.
Okay.
And I won by 17 seconds. So that was
that's pretty good.
And I qualified on pole. So that was a really good weekend to end off my season. I feel like it started at a low and ended off really high. So I would say I'm a type of person to where if I'm getting my results that I know I should be getting, then I'm really motivated. And right now I'm really motivated.
Sweet. Well, good. So as long
I have to ask one question before we let him go. Okay. Behind you on the wall there's a plaque that says track day champion.
Yep.
That's a jersey.
Is a jersey?
Yeah. Wait, it's on this side. That 3D, that camera's messing me up. Yeah, it's like a jersey, a bib.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's Legion Moto Track Days. They have a shootout race every like one of their track days. So I have a couple of those bibs around my room.
Track day champion. See, Cole, you can win a track day. You don't have to race. For the audience, you don't have to race.
Yes, you do.
It is better. Much better.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, before we let you go, appreciate you coming on here. Is there anybody you want to shout out?
Yeah, like I just want to thank my dad for everything. I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for him. He does everything for me, drives me across the country, makes sure my bikes are prepped. He's my mechanic. He's my father. I look up to him. So I want to thank him. And my mom, she also helps me out with everything. We're all kind of like a family team. So we get stuff done for sure.
Heck yeah.
And I'll shout out my sponsors. I'd like to thank Plus Racing, Bill Mola Helmets, Alpha Omega USA, 64 Degree Racing, Legion Moto Track Days, Legion SBK, Dunlop. I think I got most of them. Oh, Graves Motorsport, Vortex, and yeah, everybody else that helps me out. I really appreciate it.
Did pretty good. Again, thanks for coming on.
Of course, thanks for having me.
BMW.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Truly, thank you. It's been great. Loved hearing the story, getting it from you, and wish you the best of luck. Hopefully BMW treats you better than Kawasaki. Lugnut. And next season goes pretty good. I guess I guess we'll see, because I think that, you know, someone else out there that's also planning on racing Stock 1000, and I'm pretty sure he's running a Cali again. So we'll just have to see how that goes.
See how we stack up.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks to you once again, Chris, and thanks to our listeners for listening or watching. If you don't follow Chris on Instagram, can you give us your Instagram real quick?
Yeah. So it's Chris_Elliott_official.
Chris Elliott official with a couple underscores in there. Go follow him on Instagram. Follow his racing career. He's going to go do some great things. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you all next week.
See ya. Thank you.
See ya.